Welcome to All In, a straight shooting, science-based podcast about periods, fertility, and nurturing health outside of unrealistic beauty expectations. We will mostly, but not exclusively, focus on hypothalamic amenorrhea, HA, a component of the female athlete triad and relative energy deficiency in sport.
I'm Dr. Nicola Rinaldi, scientist and lead author of the book No Period, Now What? I specialize in helping people understand how their eating, exercise, and lifestyle habits are keeping them from hormonal health and their best life. My work focuses on regaining periods, improving fertility, and breaking free of the rules of underlying diet culture. You can book an appointment to speak with me at noperiod.info/appointments and go to noperiod.info/support to join my new online community.
My name is Florence Gillet. I am a certified eating psychology coach and the founder of beyondbodyimage.com, as well as the French Instagram account aminoré_fr. I specialize in weight-inclusive mental and body image recovery. My goal is to help people let go of toxic weight and beauty beliefs to finally feel confident in their bodies.
Florence and I also offer a joint coaching package for people wishing to address different aspects of period recovery in a more personal way, accessible from both of our appointment sites.
Every 2 weeks, the All In podcast brings you real recovery stories, expert insights, and new scientific research on HA, hormonal health, and fertility, with an unmissable touch of body respect and women's empowerment.
Just a reminder that this podcast represents the opinions of the hosts and their guests. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. It's for informational purposes only. And because each person is so unique, please consult your primary health practitioner for any medical questions.
Music by the Andy Schulman Band, available on Spotify. And before we get started with this episode, a quick word of apology. Nicola and I have encountered some technical difficulties while recording with Jess, and so you might hear some sound differences here and there, and we're really sorry for that. We do hope you really enjoyed this episode. Hi, Nicola, how are you?
Doing well, how are you? I'm excited to introduce our guest for today. This is Jess, and she has been a member of the support groups on Facebook for a while now. And we actually got to meet in person in London when I was there for a conference pre-pandemic, which I'm really missing and hoping we can get back to that at some point in the future. But anyway, so Jess is somebody who's experienced HA and recovered and has provided a lot of support and handholding and inspiration to people in the group, because I think you have a really great way of looking at your journey, Jess. So we wanted to bring her on today to share that with us. So welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome, Jess.
Thank you for having me.
So most of us with HA got the condition from a combination of underfueling and overexercise in an attempt to control our physical appearance. How did this play out in your life?
Yeah, that was like 100% for me. So I lost my period when I was 17.
Okay.
It was the last year of school for me, and I was going to go to university. And I decided that, you know, I wanted to be very thin and very beautiful. You know, and at the time I thought that those were the same thing, you know, it equated one with the other. And, you know, I think that that's the way that it's kind of presented to us a lot in culture, you know,
being absolutely
very thin, being very beautiful. And it's a choice. Like, you can have it if you want it. You just have to eat less and move more. Right. So, I mean, I'm sure lots of people are similar, but I'm the kind of personality that was like, okay, I can do that. Like, I can do that.
Yeah.
I can do it really well. I'm going to get 100% in all my exams. I'm going to be very thin. I'm going to be very beautiful. And I did all those things. And I also lost my period. And I also became very tired and very irritable. And, you know, I'm sure everyone is familiar. And, you know, I kind of kept that up in some form or other for really for nearly a decade.
Wow.
And I think, you know, at the time for me, it developed into an eating disorder very quickly. So it was quite clear to me, and it was clear to other people around me, that it was anorexia. But I don't think necessarily that I had that diagnosed officially at the time. So I think, though, the fact that I lost my period at that point didn't really bother me. And so although it kept going and it went on for the next 9 years, I just never really thought about it. Like, I did not make myself, like, look at it and investigate it. And I think if I kind of saw it as a balance, that I now had this thin body and I had this validation and, you know, I had this identity as a very, like, slim woman, that was enough for me. And the other side of the equation, the not having the period, the being cold, the being tired, it kind of felt like a fair trade-off. You know, I was like, well, this is a choice. This is a choice that I've made. It doesn't help that I was working as an actor. So I was like, this is a choice that lots of actors make, I'm sure. So, yeah, that's kind of how I started and continued.
It's definitely normalized, I think, the whole dieting and exercising and being in control of, you know, the way you look. And I would say it's even worse than that. It's actually actively encouraged, right?
So
when you're, I mean, and I don't know, were you starting from, like, being in a larger body to start with?
Oh, not really. Not really, you know,
so
in the same way that you're,
right?
Yeah, you know, when you're 16, 17 and you feel like, you know, you're bigger than other people or your body isn't acceptable or whatever, but it wasn't, you know, looking back, it wasn't, it was very normal.
Yeah. And, you know, you didn't have, like, specific health issues that you were trying to somehow help with, maybe eating differently or moving differently. It's really interesting how you get that validation, even though you start from a totally average size body, but still losing weight and becoming thinner seems like it's always encouraged. And that to me
and
is
celebrated.
Really sickening. Yeah. It's celebrated, absolutely. Yeah. And you're like, but there was nothing wrong with my body to start with. It's just so bizarre that people would keep talking about that stuff when they see you lose weight. I was just wondering, Jess, were you, so you were not officially diagnosed with anorexia, but did you get a diagnosis for hypothalamic amenorrhea? And what were your interactions with the medical world?
Those
9 years?
I don't think I ever did. I don't think... As in, I don't remember going to a doctor's appointment and a doctor saying, this is hypothalamic amenorrhea and this is why it has happened and this, you know, is what is going to happen or what is happening within your body. So I went to doctor's appointments over that decade fairly regularly. And I think the reason was mostly to kind of show that I was being responsible. You know, that I could show my parents or I could show other people. I could say, well, yes, I don't have my period, but I've been to see the doctor. And the doctor says, since I'm a runner, it's normal. So you don't need to worry. Or the doctor says, if I don't want to have children, then, you know, if I don't want to have children right now, then I don't need to worry about it. So I do. I think I remember really clearly three appointments over those 10 years. And one was the first one where the doctor said, are you a runner? So if you've lost your period, that happens to lots of runners, you know, a kind of naturalistic fallacy where it happens. So it
doesn't mean it's good. Right.
And even if deep down, you know, that it's not right, like, that's enough, isn't it? This is like a trusted medical professional who's telling me it's okay. So he must know more than my mom. You know,
it's a total and it's a total permission to go way into your eating disorder, right? Deeper into the eating disorder. Well, the doctor says it's so normal. And it's, again, validating something that is not healthy at all, especially if you're running, you know.
Of course.
Crazy. So that was doctor number one.
That was doctor number one. There was another doctor. At this point, I had picked up the terminology, and I wonder whether it was from a podcast with you, Nico. It might have been, because I was trying to think, like, exactly what point was this, but it might have been after listening to one, the Seven Health podcast. which was years ago. Yep. This was like 5-6 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
And I remember really clearly listening to that podcast and doing this like crazy mental gymnastics where you know it applies to you like 100%. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, mm-hmm. you're like, well, I don't have to worry about that. Like, that's fine. but I had a name for this because I remember going to a doctor's appointment and saying, you know, I have hypothalamic amenorrhea. I haven't had a period for this long. And the doctor said to me, oh, yeah, how do you know that? And I was like, well, I started exercising a lot. I dropped a lot of weight and then I lost my period. And she said, mm-hmm. And who's the doctor here? And I was like, you
wow.
are? And she was like, okay, so we're going to get you a test for PCOS. And I was like, okay, we can do that. And there was no blood test involved in this. She just wanted me to go get an ovarian scan.
Ultrasound.
An ultrasound. And I don't remember on the other side of that, though, there ever being a conversation about HA.
Uh-huh.
I just remember them saying, no, that ultrasound is clear.
Uh-huh. So it's not PCOS, but yet, even though you went saying, I think I have hypothalamic amenorrhea, there still mm-hmm. wasn't any agreement or...
No.
Anything to do about it? I mean, that's kind of...
Well, it might have
mind-boggling.
Been...
Mind-boggling. It's...
I know, it's bizarre, isn't it, really? I think it might have been off the back of that, though, that somebody said, okay, well, if you do have amenorrhea and you haven't had a period for, I don't know, at that point it was about 7 years, you should have a DEXA.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I had a DEXA scan. And my DEXA scan came back to show that I had osteoporosis in my hip and osteopenia in my spine. So cue some more mental gymnastics where I learned that I had osteoporosis. And at the same time, I told myself that this was no big deal because I felt fine.
Wow.
So, but, you know, I had a doctor at that point who told me, don't worry about it. This is not a problem. Yes, your DEXA says that you have the bone density of an 80-year-old, but that's because... my goodness, she told me something like, look, if you lost your period when you were 17, you didn't fully like develop your bones. So it's not that you've lost bone density. It's just that it's not fully there yet. And I was like, oh, right. Okay. so that's
but
fine.
But by that time, you're what, 23, 24?
24, yeah.
How do they explain that, you know, you literally have osteoporosis and osteopenia? I mean, it's just weird.
I think her main point was like, don't stress. Like, don't worry about it. It'll be okay. You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
So no recommendations as to anything to do to improve your bone density or...
No. I think I'd told her, I'd given her some line about, oh, I'm trying to gain weight. And she was like, that's great. Well done. So
uh-huh.
That was that. And...
Yeah.
I understand that, you know, doctors have a huge amount of things that they have to know about and that not every doctor can be an expert on every condition. But I really needed, and I think about this a lot now, I think it's so countercultural, like the behavior that mm-hmm. we need to do in order to get better, that if you manage to like fight your way through to the point where you actually say to a doctor, I would, you know, this is the problem and I need to get better, you want there to be a kind of safety net there. Where they say like, well done for getting here. Now here are the things that you need to do. Instead of you kind of like slipping through that net and being told that you know, you don't have to do anything.
You're
okay.
Fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah. I mean, it's so, I think you're exactly right that there is so much that particularly a general practitioner needs to know about that. Mm. They obviously can't know everything about everything, but I would like to think that if somebody comes to them as in their early 20s with osteoporosis, they might go and do a little bit of research and see, you know, what are the things that I can do to help this patient? So how did you then, what were your next steps? How did you find out about No Period Now What in our support group and, you know, how did you kind of get from thinking or being told that everything was okay to sort of that realization that it's not and there are things I can do about it?
Mm. I mean, I think it was like a big kind of accumulation of things in the end, because it had been such a long journey, you know, and you changed throughout. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I had heard about No Period Now What, like I say, years and years before I did anything. But part mm-hmm. of that like mental gymnastics was not reading the book, because if I read the book, then I'd have to like face the consequences, you know. I would have to like listen to my mum, who'd been telling me for years that not having a period was not normal, and me being like, it's fine, the doctor says it's
Jess's mum.
Yeah.
And sometimes nurses get really stressed and then they miss their period, so actually I'm fine, you know. Mm-hmm. But so yeah, I guess pretty much exactly 9 years after I lost it, I had got to a point at that stage where I felt I was too thin. Like I did not feel mm-hmm. strong. I did not feel good. And there had been points like that in the past, but I think this time it kind of came at the same time that I had some difficult conversations with my family over Christmas. And there was some discussion. I mean, my mum was amazing. My mum was amazing the whole time. Like she was always very open about her worries, and it was never brushed under the carpet. But she did turn mm-hmm. around to me and say that she felt she'd been enabling me somewhat by not, you know, being really like hardlined. And it's difficult mm-hmm. because I developed this as, you know, I developed the eating disorder when I was already an adult, you know, when I was already leaving the house. I think as a parent, it can be very difficult, you know, if you have like a young adult child, to know, you know, what is your role anymore? Like, to what point can you come in? Yeah. To what point can you say? And I think Christmas that year, she said to me, look, I feel like I've been enabling you. So I don't, this might, I can't really remember now. I think she said, like, don't come back to my house until you're better. That sounds really dramatic, but it was.
Oh, wow.
It was a lot softer than that. Mm-hmm. That was uh-huh. kind of message, was but, like, you know.
But I think this is what you need when you're really mm-hmm. in an eating disorder, isn't
yeah.
it?
It is.
It won't work just kind of tiptoeing around yeah. it and saying like, maybe mm-hmm. you could, maybe you should. Mm-hmm. You really, there's a point where you have to say, this is really destroying mm-hmm. you. And yeah. you can tell how strong it was, because you actually knew about your condition. Yeah. You knew, you probably heard Nicola say that it was really bad mm-hmm. for you, but you were, the eating disorder mind is really powerful, right? And will mm-hmm. actually push you to completely be in denial.
It's an interesting point, because I don't know how much like I would describe it as the eating disorder mind, and how much I would describe it as my unwillingness to look at certain parts of myself, because it was all mm-hmm. me. But I think I relied on so many like convenient truths. You know, I was really resistant to looking in at myself and looking in at how this affected other people as well. And mm-hmm. I think just all of these things came at the same time that I was actually ready a little bit to look at a few of those things. And I also had this message from my mom at the same time, and I was feeling not happy with my body at the same time. And so my conclusion was, how old was I then? 26. I was 26. And I thought, well, okay, I will put on a little bit of weight mm-hmm. and I will keep it on. And so that was where I started from. I started by thinking like, I will get a bit better. And I mm-hmm. bought the book and I started reading the book, and I stopped reading the book because I found it frightening. and I stopped exercising a little bit. And I, you know, at that point I was running for like an hour a day. You know, most days, mm-hmm. every day, some weeks. And I think it took me about 2 weeks to finish reading the book. And mm-hmm. after that, I think the timing is a little bit fuzzy now, because this is a very long time ago now. But I think it took me a few weeks or a month to realize that I could not do a little bit. Like mm-hmm. if I was going to get better, I had to commit to getting fully better for as long as that took. And I had to let my body do whatever it wanted to do. And that this was kind of going to be the end of the way that I had been living before, and that I didn't know what was going to come next. And I think that I'd always known that. I think that the reason that I'd never been able to get better before this point was because I knew that it was going to be huge, and that it was going to involve like huge changes. And it wasn't just a choice to like raise my weight to this point or hit this weight goal or, you know. And so really it took a little bit of time to come to that understanding. And then that was that, and I did it. Just took a long time.
So when you have that kind of realization where you're like, oh, this idea of putting on a little bit and moving a little bit less is not gonna work, right? Do you know kind of what triggered really that moment? And if you then decided, okay, that's it, I'm really gonna go all in, or if it also took you step by step. And I'm curious if you had any help in that.
So I did not go straight all in, even though I had that realization. And that's because I think the key for me from the beginning and still now, you know, was sustainability. And if I had dropped everything, which I'd tried to do a few times in the past, I just would not have been able to continue. And I know that there are people for whom that works much better. People who can go cold turkey on exercise, cold turkey on, well, it's the opposite of cold turkey on eating, but like, you know, suddenly like
warm turkey Thanksgiving warm dinner. Turkey.
Exactly, right? Thanksgiving dinner on the eating, cold turkey on the exercise. And I couldn't do that because I had this background of, you know, 10 years of learning how to live, how to be an adult, really, because I had never had like a grown-up adult life where I made my own decisions separate of, you know, eating disorder rules and arbitrary, like, yeah, rules and guidelines that I decided for myself. So I don't think it's a contradiction that I kind of knew that this was going to be a long journey and that I had to do it all in, as it were, in terms of mindset. And yet I couldn't follow necessarily like the 2,500 calories, zero exercise straight away. So that took me about 3 months to get to that stage.
How did that progression happen for you? Did you... did you kind of set yourself weekly or monthly goals, or how did you kind of get from, like, how did that 3 months progress?
I didn't really set goals. I mean, I think, Florence, you asked if I had any support. No. I mean, I called you, Nico. I called you very early on in that process. And I remember this conversation where I said to you, I cannot stop running. Like, I can't do that because that's too difficult for me. I can't gain that much weight because that's too difficult for me. And you were very patient. And you said, okay, why don't you try cutting down to a little bit and then check in again after a month or after 2 months and see if it's working. Maybe it will work for you, you told me. In a really positive, encouraging way that I needed to hear, you know, because I wouldn't have started otherwise. And so I did begin, and I went from my like daily hour run down to maybe once or twice a week. I would let myself run for 20 minutes. And I think it was a really important step because it helped me understand that I could feel bad and be okay. So I could not start the day with a run, which meant that I was going to feel bad that day.
Important what you're saying. And I think also that I love what you say about like, I can't possibly stop running. I can't possibly put on that, you know, change the way I eat so drastically. I'm laughing, but you know, we've definitely all been there. This is a really tough time when you read the book and you're like, geez, I'm terrified of doing all those things. And I can't possibly imagine myself living that way without losing my mind. And then, as you said, like, if you really do these things, definitely there's going to be discomfort, mm-hmm. right? Emotional and physical, because it's going to mm-hmm. be really difficult anxiety wise. And if that has been your coping mechanism since mm-hmm. you're 17, mm-hmm. literally you've learned how to numb all the difficult emotions and the stress right. and the anxiety thanks to the eating disorder. So I think a lot of the eating disorders, they also help us survive, mm-hmm. right? At some point of our lives, they help us go through managing difficult emotions mm-hmm. when we don't know how to do it, when we've never learned how to do it in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. So they're obviously an unhealthy coping mechanism. But once mm-hmm. we remove those behaviors, it can feel super overwhelming mm-hmm. where we're like, my God, I feel so horrible. Mm-hmm. And I think it is important for people, so when they go through this, as much as possible to get some sort of help, whether it is from Nicola, whether it is from a coach, whether it is from a therapist, whether it is from family that you inform and they hold you accountable or they can check on you. Definitely a doctor if you come from being really super underweight and you're going to do these things. Because the reality is, it can really also be a tricky time where you can fall into depression, where you can feel mm-hmm. really, really bad. And I think sometimes we don't expect that to happen because we don't know what's going to happen when we stop doing the behaviors. We're really scared of letting them go, but then suddenly we realize, oh my God. And it's great that you managed to turn this around and to say, I know that I can survive these difficult emotions. I feel horrible, but nothing happens, like in the sense that I'm still here anyway.
Yeah.
And then you kind of, I'm sure you figured other coping mechanisms along the way. But I just wanted to say, like, it's so important that people that have been stuck into this difficult situation, that they try and really get some sort of support when they go through this phase, because it can be tricky. For sure.
I found it really fascinating, actually. I listened and then I re-listened to the episode with Meg, who posted Megsy Recovery. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I mean, I'm already a massive fan. I was so excited. I get to be on this podcast. She's been on this podcast.
We all are massive fans. Meg, if you listen to us, we love you.
But I found it so refreshing to hear her talk about this same thing, like tolerating feeling mm-hmm. bad and connecting that to anorexia, because I think in all of the, I never really had formal treatment for anorexia, but in the short periods where I did see like a therapist or a counselor, you know, you would talk about the control, you would talk about your family background, you would talk about how you felt around food, but no one, I don't remember ever anyone making this connection of like, you just want to feel safe and okay every day. Because mm-hmm. for me, it was about if I go running today, if I don't challenge myself to eat this thing that makes me feel uncomfortable, I will feel okay. Yeah. And when I came to the period recovery thing, the difficulty with giving up exercise was this idea that if I do not run in the morning, I will not feel okay. And so I can do the other parts, I can increase the food, but if I don't have that run, I'm just going to feel awful all the time.
Yeah.
And slowly, I think you learn not only to cope with how that feels and how that difficulty feels, but if you do the work and you kind of learn to listen to your body in a way, you eventually get to the point where actually sometimes you enjoy it a little bit. So you rested today and it maybe felt okay, and then another time you rested and it actually felt quite good, and then that opens a whole nother can of worms, because you have to investigate, does that change your identity, does that mean that you're giving up now, does that mean that you're not a runner now? And that's more work, but it's like small steps. And so you asked, sorry, I'm talking, but you asked if I had like goals, if I set myself goals, Florence, but I didn't. I just every day I did what I could do that day, and I tried to be honest about how I felt about it. So I tried to not let that identity, that previous I am a runner and I don't like resting and I don't like eating that much and I don't like all of these things. I tried to be open to that changing. Mm-hmm. And so that meant that at three months I could do something different, and at 6 months I could do something different. And
right. Yeah, I think that change in mindset and the recognition that if you do something different, it doesn't actually mean that you're not the same person. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you. It means that you're growing and you're changing and you're allowing yourself to experience something new. And I think that that's those kinds of steps forwards make such a big difference in the recovery process, like allowing yourself to be something different from what you are today, tomorrow. And, you know, I think that looking at it that way makes such a big, is so important for the recovery process, recognizing that you don't have to always do the same things. In fact, part of life is experiencing new things and trying new things and growing and branching and changing and not being stuck in who you are today all the time. And, you know, I think that that's a really, like, the fact that you recognize that and were able to see that through the process, I think is fantastic.
Yeah. And baby steps. So, definitely. Yes. Lots of baby steps, right? Not imagining this. Yeah, not imagining like I have to be there by that time and I have to do things this way and being very rigid about it. I think it's really about also letting go, really learning that, well, it's not black or white like it used to be when I had all these rules that I needed to follow. There's a lot of gray and I'm just going to have to put one foot in front of the other. I really like what you say there because I think it, for a lot of us in recovery, it feels so... the unknown and the you know, uncertainty of how long it's going to take, you know, am I doing the right thing? All of these things. It's just really difficult to go through. So just saying, I'm going to take it one day at a time, almost like alcoholics do, right? When they go to the Alcoholic Anonymous, they really just work on 24 hours at a time. And they say 24 hours, just surviving those 24 hours and then tomorrow's another day and I'll take it one day at a time is not a bad way to look at it, to be honest.
And I don't want to imply that I didn't struggle with the unknown. I struggled hugely with not knowing. Every time I hit another milestone or something that I had like identified as a milestone for no reason, you know, 6 months, because that's the average amount of time that it takes, or 9 months or a year. Every time I got to one of those and this quote unquote hadn't worked for me, I hadn't got my period back, I really struggled with not knowing. And so at those points, that was when I had to kind of double down on the one day, like one day, just a day.
So you had said that you sort of stepped your way into All In over the course of about 3 months. So what did All In look like for you after that 3 months?
So I think after kind of those 3 months where I eased in, I really committed to All In, you know, in terms of the book guidelines. So eating a minimum of 2,500 calories, although I'm pretty sure it was more than that, you know, most days. And cutting out, you know, until the end of that first year, especially like just cutting out all formal exercise. And I think the difficult thing for me was that although I knew that it was going to be this like long journey and that I was definitely going to keep going until the end, I think what I hadn't quite been prepared for was the idea that you can follow all of the guidelines and you can, you know, do everything right, quote unquote. And, you know, you can get to a year and it still, like, hasn't happened for you. And I think, you know, like, it's very, very difficult because if, say, you are, like, 9 months in or you're 10 months in, whatever, and you don't have your period, like, it is so frustrating to hear that you have to keep going and you feel like other people don't understand, like, quite how difficult it is to do that every single day, you know? If your whole like life or your, you know, the last few years or whatever, for me, my whole adult life, if you've prioritized and sacrificed things in order to be small and someone is telling you you have to be much bigger, or if you, you know, you have to rest when your coping mechanism completely has been moving, and you have to do this for an unknown amount of time, and other people are doing it quicker. And, you know, I had amazing support from my family and, you know, from Unico and my friends. And especially when I met you, when we were in London, I met one particular friend through the group, Christina, who gave me, you know, she was my rock in all of this. But it's something that you have to do alone. You know, you have to make those decisions to not go for that run, to eat a snack every single day for months and months. And that is so, so hard. And to be clear about it, like, it took, so it took me 20 months from that first day that I started recovery to the day that I got that first natural period. And I think when we hear those kind of numbers, we assume that that was someone who chose to keep exercising throughout, or who just, you know, could only raise their calories a very little bit, you know, because that's one of the narratives that is out there, that you can do this slowly, but it's going to be really hard. And, you know, there is no right way to do this. That is a way to do this. But I didn't make that choice, you know, and I think precisely because I had had in mind that, yes, I could stop, I could sacrifice my thinness and my confidence and the comfort that that gave me, and that the payback would be getting my period back, right, in 6 months, maybe 9 months, maybe 12 months. And so when that didn't happen, you know, when it was month after month after month, and I was doing these things that I had previously felt were impossible, you know, things like continuing to rest and continuing to rest, I really did find it very, very hard. And at times I could, you know, I could listen in and I could hear, you know, like we were saying, that I was enjoying the rest some days. But other days, when I heard people saying, oh, you just have to keep going, I was so angry. You know, I was like, I've learned all the lessons now. Like, I've done all the things. I've gone all in. I've really, really done this. Why do I still have to do more? And I think at that point, you know, we have to remember that our bodies are all different, and we have different amounts to heal and to fix, like mentally and physically. And it might be that you are doing everything right, but you need more time. You know, like a bell curve is just a bell curve. And I think I was on the very extreme end of a bell curve. You know, my genetics, the place that I came from, the fact that I had all of this, like, you know, disordered eating to work through as well. So if I was hitting 25 calories, that was amazing, but I couldn't necessarily do more some days. And I think that probably also, like, for me, things maybe happened in a different order. So my bones got very strong quite early. You know, I reversed quite a lot of the damage. I got a good DEXA result after about 10 or 11 months, even before I started ovulating again.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it was really unexpected. So, I mean, I just think that, yeah, if, you know, if this is taking a longer time for you, if you're at 9 months or 12 months or whatever, you just have to remember that there is lots of other stuff going on. You know, if you know that you're doing the work, but your period hasn't happened, have you made mental progress? Are you feeling well rested? Are your bones stronger? Maybe your heart stronger? Maybe your hair's stronger, you know? Like, so when I was all in, you know, I think all of these things were happening, even if I, you know, found it difficult to notice them because I was so focused on, like, the period. But I think it was only really because I went all in, and even though I didn't feel ready for it, like, because I did that challenge, those things all were happening. It was just difficult for me to see at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really great point to really think about the other benefits that are happening at the same time, even if you don't have your period back. And I think that's what I often try and get people to focus on is the, you know, how much more you're enjoying your relationships with people, you know, feeling sexier, more libido, better hair, better nails, less cold all the time. I mean, so many things that besides just a period. So
Completely.
So it did end up taking you a while to get your period back. It did happen though. So we did talk about some ways to push your body forward at some points. You've also shared some of your thoughts through that time with readers on my blog, which people can see at noperiod.info/Jess to get started on the journey. And I think that one of the keys that you shared is, as we've just been talking about, is taking things one day at a time, not thinking today about what things might look like a year from now or anything like that. Can you tell us a little bit more about how your mindset changed through the process of recovery and getting your period and what getting your period meant, and then how you've sort of moved forward from thinking about that as the goal? Because I think we talk about this a lot, that, you know, the period is kind of a marker, but it's not really the goal of recovery. The goal of recovery is living a life where you're free from food and exercise, and you get to do the things that you really enjoy without those taking up too much of your mental space.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a huge question, but I was thinking a little bit about, I was thinking this morning a little bit about this, like, mindset shift and the taking it one day at a time. And I kind of had a metaphor come to me, but I haven't used it out loud before. So I'm just going to see where it goes, and we might have to shut it
down.
If it's total nonsense. So one of the things that I've done over the last year is I started learning Spanish because I had time and I had energy, and there are amazing things that you can do that you don't realize that you are lacking the energy and the brain space to do when you're in it. But and Duolingo tells me that today is day 364 of me studying. So tomorrow I will have studied for a whole year, which is great. At the weekend, actually, I'm going for the first time. I'm taking myself to Spain, which is exciting.
Fantastic.
And I am going to, like, go to cafes and order a coffee and, I don't know, let's think of a more realistic example. I'm going to go to bars and I'm going to speak to cute Spanish men. And if you had told me, like a year ago or a year and a week ago, this is what you have to do. You have to go to this bar and you have to talk to Pablo. And I would have said, I can't do that. I cannot do that because I cannot speak Spanish. I cannot speak a word of Spanish. I couldn't speak a word a year ago. And I did not have to do it then. Like, me back then did not have to do that. There was no point thinking about whether I could do that or not, because I hadn't taken any lessons. I hadn't tried speaking in a conversation class. I hadn't made any mistakes. I hadn't done any of, like, the process that I have now done that has put me in the position where next week I will go to the bar and I will talk to Pablo and we'll have a lovely time, right? But
yeah.
I am a different person now than I was a year ago in that respect. And it's exactly the same thing. You know, I think so many people, like I definitely came to this and I thought, how on earth am I going to cope with not exercising for a month or for 2 months or for 6 months? Or, oh my gosh, what if it takes as long as it took her, as in me, as in 20 months? Because it did, you know, overall, from the day that I decided I was going to get my period back to the day that it came back was 20 months. And I think people hear that and they're like, how is that possible? But me at the beginning was a different person from me 3 months later, who could cope with different challenges, who would take me on to being me at 6 months, which would take me on to being me at 15 months. So I think that's kind of the message that I want to get with the Pablo metaphor. Does that make any sense?
I think that's a perfect metaphor. You know, it because in a way you are learning a different language through this process. You're learning about how to think about your body differently and speak to your body and yourself differently. You're learning about new ways of eating and moving and not focusing on, or focusing on food in a different way, focusing on food as nourishment as opposed to punishment. I mean, there is so much to learn through this. And I think the idea of, like, almost you're building day to day your skills about how to eat in a way to nourish your body instead of punish it, and, you know, how to move your body for enjoyment rather than, again, to make it adapt to the way society tells us it should be. So I think that's a lovely metaphor. I Yeah,
exactly. And I think that this process of like building, you know, your building blocks that you get every day, if you are doing that and you are doing it every day, and like we were saying previously, if you're open to change and to not clinging on to like a particular mentality or a particular like mindset or identity, your period will come back. But it might not happen at the same time as you having, you know, as the same time that you can speak Spanish, you know, or the same time that you've like finished. So I think in a way that this is going to sound mad, but I feel lucky that it took 20 months for me, mm-hmm. because I had mm-hmm. such a long history of disordered behavior that I did not need kind of the permission card of my period coming back any earlier than it did. Because if it had done, I don't think I would have had the motivation to keep like building those blocks. I'm going to take my metaphor back, you know, to keep like practicing my vocabulary. I think I would have taken it as like a free card, like go to Spain, speak to Pablo now, mm-hmm. even though you're going to screw it up because you don't know the right words, you know? So in a way, I think if your period comes back very early in this process of recovery, in a way you have more of a challenge because you've mm-hmm. got this brilliant sign that you're on the right path. But if you haven't done that kind of like mental work underneath it, if you haven't explored that, you know, the reasons that you ended up with HA in the first place, if you haven't explored the mental side of it, if you haven't explored why you were the kind of person who was able to push through tiredness and ignore your body's signals and whatever it was, we're all super different, but whatever it was that got you to that place, you're probably going to still have some difficulties after your period comes back, you know?
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
But.
And that's interesting because what would you say then was the kind of big learning of this whole all-in journey and recovery? Because clearly it was much more than a period, and we mentioned that in many episodes of the podcast that usually it's very rare that people that have done this deep work of changing and learning and listening to their bodies and being more in tune with their bodies, they don't want to go back to external rules and being super rigid about everything. So what would you say this journey has taught you? Or what you kind of got out of it?
I mean, 100 things. Like, I feel like what I got out of it is like my life now and actually being able to fully participate in my life in a way that I kind of chose not to for, you know, the decade that I wasn't eating. I wasn't, you know, I was expending all of my energy in one area that had, you know, no potential to grow or to change. But I think that probably the main thing that I have learned from it is kind of this sense of honesty with myself that I was talking about before. So I spent that decade telling myself these convenient truths, telling myself that it didn't matter that I had osteoporosis, or it didn't matter that I didn't have my period, or I think it's a similar thing. It didn't matter that I was tired because I would feel better when I'd had a run, or it didn't matter that I was hungry because, I don't know, I was going to have a delicious dinner later and that would be worth it. Like, I never explored, I didn't give myself space to be honest with myself in a way that I had to learn to be, like, during this process. I had to learn to feel bad and to admit that I felt bad and to know that I was going to be okay. I had to learn to understand when I was hungry. I had to learn how to eat, even though I wasn't hungry, because I knew on a different level that I needed to. Like, it's very complicated. But I think the baseline under all of it is that I couldn't, like, tell myself these lines anymore. You know, it wasn't going to cut it. And in a way, it's something that I still have to do now. You know, if there's a challenge that I have, you know, sometimes for me still, like, spontaneity around food can be a challenge. And it's something that, especially like this year, as the world has gone back from being in lockdown and things, it's something that I've been challenging. It is far more important for me now to be aware that there are still small things that I could work on than to say, oh, well, it's been 3 years, so everything's fine. You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I guess that's one of the biggest things.
Yeah.
It's so a cool one.
I think there are a lot of people who are working on recovery and do have their period as sort of like the end goal. Mm. And then they get to 6 months or 9 months and the period hasn't come back. And they're like, they sort of feel like saying, screw it. I'm just going to, like, this isn't going to work for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to go back to, you know, being smaller because at least I get that validation. So what might you say to somebody who's in that situation?
It's a really difficult one because I remember feeling like that really clearly, and it's really, really tough. But I think, I mean, for me, it never felt like a choice of something that I could go back to before, because before clearly was not working for me and was not working for my body. And so it wasn't like, oh, well, that was a life choice that was okay. Because once I knew that it wasn't okay, I couldn't unknow that. So I think I would just really work on kind of decoupling this idea of your period coming back being the end goal. And that is such a difficult thing to kind of understand or to accept, because when I was there, I was lucky enough to work with Renee McGregor for a while, who I'm sure lots of people will have heard of. She's a super HA-informed sports nutritionist. And I had a few sessions with her kind of 13 or 14 months in, and I didn't have my period back yet. And she used to say to me, why does it matter so much to you when your period comes back? And I thought she was mad. I was like, because I have been trying so hard and it's not working for me. And I want this like terrible, like not knowing to be gone. And because I want to go running again, which of course was still under there. And like, I loved it and I desperately missed it. And I'd done all of this physical work and all of this mental work. And I felt it was very unfair that it still wasn't working for me. Mm-hmm. And in the end, what she helped me to see and what I kind of came to see over the next, like still the next 6 months that it took, was that what I had to do was build a kind of sustainable lifestyle that I could continue when my period came back, after my period came back. It's not a set of changes that you put in place until your period comes back and then you can just drop them all. So if you are so desperate for your period to come back, why, you know? So that you can stop doing all the things you're doing now, because if they're the things that bring it back, then you can't just stop. It's very complex because, you know, everybody is different. And let's say you really want to get pregnant, then of course you desperately want your period to come back. And it feels like, you know, every month that that hasn't happened maybe feels quite panicky or it's wasted time. But in the end, as harsh as it sounds, it's still the same message. Like, if you are going to be responsible for a new life, you have to build a life for yourself that is nourishing and that is sustainable, that you are going to model for somebody else. So
yeah,
I don't know how much I've explained that. And I can still, if I'd heard that at the time, I would have been like, yeah, that sounds lovely, but you don't understand. but in the end, you know, from this position, I can see that now. And I did, I think by the time my period came back, I had built a little bit of movement back into my life because, you know, I'd given myself a good 9-10 months of solid rest. And yeah. although it was scary because I was moving away from like the quote unquote all-in principles, I still had the same mindset that I had developed over mm-hmm. those last 10 months. And sometimes I feel like there's a little bit of a pressure, you know, from the kind of people that tend to get HA. We tend to be very like guidelines focused, and you want to do things perfectly, and you want to do all yes. in perfectly. And people sometimes yes. like from a very good place are saying like, well, are you sure you're 100% all in? Did you go for a run on your birthday 6 months ago? You know, then that's why your period hasn't come back yet. And I had to kind of shift and change things a little bit from the 12-month point. I started to understand that it was more about building a lifestyle that would be sustainable forever.
Yeah.
And that's very nuanced because I'm not saying, oh, maybe we have to cut this bit because I think, you know, it's very difficult because I'm not saying like, oh, I was exercising and then I got my period back. So you can just imagine someone hearing this and saying like, oh, you exercised and you got yes. your period back. I also rested for 10 months.
The all-in guidelines are guidelines. It's never meant to be, you must eat exactly this amount exactly every day. You must never let your heart rate get above 100 beats per minute. Mm-hmm. It's just general guidelines. And as you say,
we're not a diet.
The idea mm-hmm. is, right, right. I mean, the idea is building a new way of thinking about your nourishment and your movement that is sustainable for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And I think, I do think that, you know, there have been a lot of people that I've seen over the years that I've worked with directly or indirectly who started like, who did see the period as a marker. It's like, yay, I got my period back. I'm recovered. I can go do all these things that I really used to do and that I want to do again. Like I can go running. And yeah. so you go running 4 days a week. You know, you get your first period, you go running 4 days a week, and then your second period doesn't come. So mm-hmm. based on that, I sort of started recommending that people wait for three periods. And so now it's like, now the three period thing is this marker, but it's still, you have to kind of build back in, you know, build your life slowly and, you know, add these building blocks. You know, again, it's not like three periods is a magic number. It's like, okay, now you can start to think about like making some changes, maybe adding running a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. tracking your ovulation to sort of make sure that you're not taking mm-hmm. things too quickly or too far. But sort of all, it's all about building a life that is sustainable for the future.
Exactly. And I think that the key to that is, like I've said again and again, like this honesty, because since we are all different, you cannot take like somebody else's experience. Oh, she did this, so this means that I can do this. Or the book says that I have yes. to do this, so it means that I can now go running because I've had three periods. You have to have developed that skill to know for yourself if it's really okay or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after 12 months for me, it was okay to do a little bit of movement that was different. It wasn't running. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had some guidance from Rini and her team to do a little bit of weightlifting, which was a totally new kind of movement for me. It mm-hmm. didn't have any of this kind of background of changing my body or you know, wanting to get slimmer or anything like that. It was just something new, and it was something that I had to think very carefully about whether I was ready to do. And uh-huh. yeah, so I think developing the skill of being very honest with yourself is really key, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because some of us will go all in immediately and just find that it's the best way for them. And others will need to really thread carefully and just kind of go one step at a time. And now having worked with clients for, 3 years now, I can totally see that we all have a different way to approach mm-hmm. the all in process and the recovery process. And it's really not because you're going to take it maybe a bit slowly at the beginning. Like, you know, the only thing that I put as a caveat for clients in that case is that it might actually extend the recovery time, right? Mm-hmm. But if that's the only way that you can somehow tackle the difficulty of letting go of those coping mechanisms that are really unhealthy for you, it might be worth going that way, right? Mm. And cutting down mm-hmm. a little bit on the exercise. So for some of us, it's easier to eat more as a first step because we're really hungry and we're really frustrated with all the dieting. So maybe this is a good way to start. And then for some others, it will be, you know what, I actually don't want to exercise as much as I used to. Mm. So maybe that's going to be the way. And what I find interesting is that naturally there's this understanding that builds up also about what exactly what you said. Oh, I didn't go running every day and I was fine. Like in the sense that, of course, it was uncomfortable because I felt guilty and all of that diet culture and mindset we have. But overall, like I survived, right? I didn't, I didn't go running. I didn't, you know, I didn't drop dead or I didn't suddenly felt like my body was completely different. Mm-hmm. And that helps them to keep working towards recovery. I don't know if this is also your experience, Nicola, but I know we work on very similar ways. So although Olin says really like put all your cards on the table and just go for it, it may look different from one person to the other.
And it absolutely looks different from one person to another. Mm. Everybody's journey is unique.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong, because you're right. Like when we're perfectionists to start with, we hear that a lot, right, in recovery. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I'm not doing exactly what is said in the book. What's going to happen? Am I going to go back completely to the place I was before? No, of course not. You're just building up and gaining more energy and keeping that energy, and it's not going to be lost. So obviously with the caveat that we don't want to extend too long the work of recovery, right? Because you've experienced it firsthand. 20 months is a really, really long time. And there are many ways to actually go into lapses or full relapses. So it might be a bit tricky to stay too long in the process. And we definitely don't want people to get stuck in there.
I think a little bit of what you're talking about, though, is if somebody is, say, continuing to do a fair bit of high-intensity exercise and not able to stop doing that, well, then they're not really doing the work of recovery. So, you know, I think it has to be this sort of guided change. Yeah.
This is where it's so nuanced, isn't it? And it's very difficult to to make a podcast or to write a book that applies to everybody, because we're all in such different places. So we hear things with different ears. You know, person number one who didn't start learning Spanish yet hears something with different ears and can understand it in a different way from someone who's been doing this for 3 months. So although I agree, I also think in some ways it's really important to do something like All In, even when you don't feel ready. So for me, I didn't feel ready when I did it. I eased in, but I didn't feel ready to stop everything. But only because I did in the end stop everything after about 3 months did I learn some of these lessons that I wouldn't have done anyway. So it can be quite difficult to say, like, take things at your pace, but you have to at some point.
No, for sure. Jump. For sure. I totally agree. Like there needs to be change, right? And and that will be also the first thing on the group or with clients where we'll say like, okay, now we're going to get nowhere if we keep like pleasing the disordered eating mind or the eating disorder, right? We're not here to do that. We're here to really come out of it. So I totally agree, but it's so nuanced, and I appreciate you bringing that up, because I don't think we've had that discussion on the podcast yet.
Yeah. Was there anything else that you wanted to say?
I just want to say, you know, it will happen. You know, if it happened for me, and I was a very extreme case, you know, I started at, you know, 26 when I'd had this decade of being very ill, and I was, you know, had only particular coping mechanisms like moving and underfueling and things like that. And if I can keep going and keep going and keep going and eventually get to this place, I know there are so many voices while you're going through recovery of people being like, oh, it's going to be amazing. You're definitely going to do it. You're not going to think about your body. You're not going to think about how much you eat. You're going to feel really free. I used to be like, yeah, not me. You know, I'm too extreme. I can't do this. But if I can, you know, if I can do this, if it can take 20 months, but I can do this and I can be at the place where I am now, and then I think anyone can. It might yeah. just take, it might not happen on the same timeline as everyone else.
Yep. And if I remember correctly, we did also chat about some other options for jumpstarting your period, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were so helpful, you know, in giving me this kind of, you know, this information and these options that I just didn't hear about anywhere else. So with the Clomid, mm-hmm. so I took 2 rounds of Clomid in the summer of 2020. They were successful, although it then took mm-hmm. another 2 months, I think, to get a natural period after that. But I mean, yeah. in terms of showing me something, you know, was working, mm-hmm. you know, it was just such a big boost to my mental health. And also, who knows, you know, maybe it did help. Maybe it was the catalyst, but really having yeah. you there and having that option was just amazing. And I think particularly if you are wanting to get pregnant and you really know that you've done that work and that you've, you know, done all of that healing, but your body just needs a little bit more, then yeah. I would definitely recommend to anybody to talk to you about that.
Fabulous. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today,
Thank
Jess.
You guys.
It's been lovely having you. And yes. really, I think that the way that you express your mindset changes, I think, is going to be so helpful for so many people who are going through this. So just thank you again and again and again for that.
Thank you so much, and all the best for that. I don't know if it's a real trip you're going to take to Spain.
But oh, no, I really am this weekend. I'm really excited.
Enjoy that trip.
Thank you.
That sounds amazing.
Yes.
Bye.
All right. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please take a few minutes to reflect on it and think how you have been all in this past week or few weeks. It always strikes me how different each person's all-in journey is. As I often say, there are many paths to HA and many paths out of it. Your journey is unique.
That is so true. And if you need more support on your journey, you should definitely start with No Period Now What, which you can get at noperiod.info/book.
You can also go to noperiod.info/appointments to schedule a time to speak with me on understanding your blood work, fixing issues underlying your missing periods, and for guidance around fertility treatments, pregnancy, and post-recovery changes.
And visit beyondbodyimage.com/work-with-me to connect with me to overcome the fear of weight gain and finally develop healthy coping mechanisms around stress and your relationship with food, exercise, and your body. Remember, we also have joined clients, so you can access both our domains of expertise within a common coaching package of sessions available from both our websites.
Also, join the No Period Now What Recovery Support Group at noperiod.info/support and let us know how All In is going for you. Finally, if you enjoyed this podcast and found it helpful, please drop us a review on iTunes to help more people find it.
All In is not just about period recovery, it's about getting your life back. See you in 2 weeks.